Call the House Transportation Committee to order. It is about 6 minutes after 1:00, and let the record reflect that the following House members are present today. Johnson, Tammy Wilson, Pete Peterson, and
you.
Myself,
you.
Wilson. And then also we have some Senate members with us today. The transportation chairman in the Senate, Senator Kokesh, and also Senator Menard. So thank you for joining us today. And what we're going to do today, well, I almost forgot the most important people. I'd like to recognize our staff today. Nancy Hemingway is the House Recording Secretary. Sammy is our LIO monitor. And my aide, Becky Rooney. So turn off your cell phones. Oh, and Representative Gruenberg has just joined us. And turn off your cell phones, please, because even when they vibrate, they cause a little static on the microphones. Last week, we started our overview with the Department of Transportation, and we didn't have enough time to finish, so we're going to have the department back today to continue their story and their update. And I believe we ended up with, we were still on safety corridors, and so our Deputy Commissioner of DOT, Frank Richards, come forward, please. And we'll just let you start right in.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. For the record, Frank Richards, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. And again, like last time, there's DOT staff, and if I may, I'd like to recognize them. My counterpart is Deputy Commissioner Jim Beadle for the Marine Highway System is here. So any of those hard questions that you have on the ferries, Jim, will be able to address. We have Mary Sirocki, our legislative liaison. And then new members I'd like to introduce, Joel St. Aubin, who is the chief engineer for our facilities division. That's our buildings design and construction branch. And Mike Coffey, who is our statewide maintenance and operation chief. And then lastly, but not least, Cindy Cashin, who is the head of our statewide safety office, who will be here to help me for any of those hard questions that we may have on the highway safety corridors.
All right. Thank you very much. And Representative Johansson has just joined us. And thank you for being available in the back there. And I see one face that I haven't seen before anyway, for sure. So anyway, thank you so much. And Frank, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Again, where we left off last time was talking about what we call the three E's. That's education, enforcement, and engineering, and how we are using those to address the issues that we see on our highway safety corridors. And again, those highway safety corridors are statutorily allow designations on certain of our highways where we see that we have high number of fatalities and major injury accidents. So those are the Seward Highway, the Parks Highway, the Sterling Highway, Kennet Goose Bay Road. So what I would like to do, Madam Chairman, after last week's interest, we pulled together some of our safety data, and I wanted to share that with the committee. And that's what this slide represents, specifically for the Seward Highway, looking at trends dating back since 1977 up to present day, identifying both major injury, crash, fatal crashes, and traffic volumes in the yellow. Key point is traffic volumes are ever increasing. These are average annualized traffic numbers. And the unfortunate numbers in red, which are our fatalities. Specifically for the Seward Highway, the fatality rates appear to be on an average constant over that 30 plus year timeline, although our major injury and accidents are somewhat trending downward. But again, what we have done on the Seward Highway to address these, we're again designate this portion of the road in 2006 as a traffic safety corridor, and then what we're doing to move forward with to try and improve the accident and fatality incidences through the engineering, education, and enforcement acts. Specifically, what we have done is done some rut repair on the highway safety corridor, which is milepost 87 through 117 of the Seward Highway. We have a contract out for installing rumble strips. Those are those divots that you see alongside the road, and now we're going to be putting them on the center line because we see that they act as very good prevention from folks that traveling across the center line into oncoming traffic. And that has proven to be nationwide a very good deterrent for those deviation type of incidents. And we're also putting in place, yes, ma'am?
Sorry, but I just wanted to have it on the record that Representative Munoz has just joined us. Thank you. Go ahead.
What we're also doing are some of the software engineering type applications such as putting in signing for use of headlights, putting in a half-mile marker, mile post indicators to identify where folks are on the highway, and then a new program that we're going to initiate, which is called the READY program, which stands for Report Every Dangerous Driver. And I believe it was Representative Johnson that talked about the need for a similar type of a program at the last meeting. This is a recommendation that came to the department, has worked through our safety personnel, and is ready to launch likely in February. We'll be working with the local jurisdictions of the police departments in those communities, and also with the Alaska State Troopers and the Bureau of Highway Safety Patrol. So when folks see a dangerous driver, there will be ready signs to which essentially indicate dial 911, talk to those folks, and then indicate where you have a dangerous driver on those particular highways. And then the police will be able to respond with their vehicles. We also have out in front of us continued additions to the Bureau of Highway Safety Patrol as they're able to attract folks into their organization, and we get them trained up for essentially allocation out to the areas that we have needs for the Bureau. And we have ongoing media efforts which are addressing, you know, dangerous driving, drunk driving, distractions, trying to get the folks, both Alaskans and our visitors, when they come to the state, to recognize that some of these areas deserve due attention, and hopefully will help those folks in driving much safer. And then in the long term, we have some very large projects that we have partial funding for, or we'll be seeking funding to do some major work out there, specifically passing lanes, slow vehicle turnouts, and then rehabilitation, and in the areas around Windy Corner, which we will put in place some parking areas. If the committee remembers, that's an area that we drove to on the Seward Highway, and we saw that the where the sheep come down to the road, there's no existing parking areas, and it creates a major problem when tourists want to stop alongside the road, pull their camera out, and yet you have 14, 15,000 vehicles a day trying to drive through there. It's just an accident waiting to happen.
Frank, would you clarify on that slide where it says guardrail removal, that's explain the reasoning behind that. It's under short term efforts. It's the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, the eighth one down, 211. Milepost 88, guardrail removal.
Yes, Madam Chairman, I believe that this project is where we have guardrail on both sides of the road, and you normally like to place guardrail where you have a major height differential between the side of the road and the actual roadside. But in this case, I think we're seeing where the guardrails are acting as somewhat ping pong paddles, where you get an accident, it bounces off of one guardrail into an opposing lane, and then you have a major accident. I believe that's the case, but I will check into that. If I'm incorrect, I'll pass that on.
Thank you.
Next up, Madam Chairman, is the Parks Highway and the trend lines that we are seeing along the Parks Highway. Unfortunately, we are seeing both the major injury accidents as well as the fatalities on this section of the road increasing. We are seeing the traffic in this portion of the Parks Highway increasing. And so this is an area where we have taking notice and are working through the environmental documents and the preliminary designs to build out that highway so we can provide a safer facility for the commuters and the daily traffic that uses that section of road. As the valley is growing and we see more folks moving northward out towards Big Lake, Houston, Willow, Talkeetna area, we're seeing the traffic numbers just continue to grow. And unfortunately, we're seeing the accidents associated with that. This section of the highway is still a two-lane road with adjacent businesses and homes. That unfortunately, with the high volume of traffic, has generated the accident history that we now see. What we have done in this area is, again, trying to take advantage of putting in traffic signals at Vine Street. This area had a major asphalt rutting, and we've recently done a mill and overlay in that section of road. We've done removal of brush alongside the road, and then we're also doing rumble strips and signing for headlights in this area. And again, within the traffic safety corridor, we'll also be doing the READY program. The Bureau of Highway Patrol is adding to their numbers and is also putting in more troopers and have opened up a Pittman Road station. That has helped out. And then we're also working with the Mat-Su Borough to assist us in ongoing efforts for both media as well as police officers. And then in the long term, it's going to be building out this section of road to a four-lane highway. And we have funding in our current statewide transportation improvement program to do that, going on forward with the design efforts and then into construction. But it's going to be a multi-phase effort to be able to do that, because cost estimates are now up to about $125 million for that section of road.
Madam Chair.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Frank, thank you. When you do your studies on fatalities, I mean, we look up there, we see numbers. Is it broken into days of the week? My guess is in both this safety corridor and probably the Seward Highway safety corridor, weekends are probably worse than weekdays. And do you coordinate, if that in fact is true, do you coordinate with law enforcement to take the times when the higher traffic and the better opportunity for fatality exists? Do you coordinate with them on patrolling, and is there that kind of coordination that goes on between DOT and Department of Public Safety?
Through the Chair, Representative Johnson, I'm proud to say that yes, we do have good coordination with, again, the Bureau of Highway Patrol. I'll ask Cindy Cashin to come up and give you the specifics, but it's a good recognition of the number of accidents, and then when we are asking the troopers to be able to come forward, as well as local police to be able to patrol those areas.
For the record, my name is Cindy Cashin. I'm the administrator for the Alaska Highway Safety Office. Through the Chair, Representative Johnson, yes, we do look at the data that includes the fatalities and major crashes for the hours, the days of the week, and the location. For the Seward Highway, it's the one of the major factors is the return trip. So it's through the audits that we conduct, the road reviews, where we basically were in one van with a representative from the state troopers, emergency medical responder, the central region engineer, and myself, and we discuss where enforcement needs to best be put into place, where engineering can be, and where education. And we get very, very specific as to the types of groups of drivers, motorists, that we want to reach. And so what's interesting is that our drunk driver, of course, is traditionally on the weekends after the bars close. But our passing driver, our speeding driver, is someone who tends to be driving around lunchtime or when school gets out. So we're not only looking at the fatality and traffic injuries, but we're looking at the factors involved in those particular crashes.
Chairman. Follow-up, Representative Johnson.
And I sort of knew the answer to the question, but I do want to say how pleased I am that you do coordinate with you enforce at the right time. You're probably going to be a deterrent as well as save some lives. So I do appreciate that and encourage that type of cooperation to continue.
Thank you very much.
Madam Chair.
Representative Johansson.
Can you list off the people that sit together? You listed off four or five people that talk about it. Could you do that for me one more time?
Sure. There's actually more of us in the van, but the chief representatives of the safety corridor review team are captain from the Alaska State Troopers, emergency medical responder from that region, the central region traffic safety engineer, and myself, the administrator for the Highway Safety Office.
Thank you.
We also try to include a local engineer and basically anyone else that wants to travel with us. And we are also sure to meet with the local law enforcement agencies along our routes.
Follow-up, Representative Johansson.
Yeah. Is there coordination with, we had conversation about this, I don't know what committee it was, what was this committee, but when it was, but do you coordinate with the Anchorage Police Department as some of the challenges are within their jurisdiction?
Well, we do, but not with the traffic safety corridors specifically. We do, it's done in a different format. With the Anchorage Police Department, we will meet with them during the road review when we first reach, when we first begin conducting the road review. They will be amongst the first people that we meet. We regularly keep the Anchorage Police Department updated on what's going on between the troopers, the engineering office, and my office. And often there is input from them and often, you know, not. It's just we're making sure everyone knows what everyone else is doing.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Madam Chairman, the next highway safety corridor is again the Knik Goose Bay Road. This is a road that leads from Wasilla down towards Point McKenzie. It has seen a tremendous growth in that area of the valley where home subdivisions have gone up in great number, and we're seeing again the traffic line at a fairly steep incline, and we have seen again the accident, major injury accident rate climb quite precipitously, while the fatality rate, albeit one too many, has been remaining steady since about 1977. What we envision doing on Knik Goose Bay Road are, again, similar efforts, putting in traffic signals at Pittman Road and Vine Street, Fairview Loop, also looking at Fern Street, trying to get a flow of traffic from those off-roads so that they're not trying to cut across traffic and instigating those major accidents. We are again putting in rumble safety strips along the center line and shoulders with the readiness program, and again the Bureau of Highway Patrol with the troopers through their Pittman Road office are patrolling this area as well. And then also we are targeting our media campaign into the valley to on these specific road corridors, and then looking out in the future what is going to take to provide for a four-lane highway through that area. But again, it'll be a major right-of-way take and a very high cost to do that.
Senator Menard,
could you refresh us as a committee to the cost of each new signal light that goes?
Through the chair, Senator Menard, the signals that we put into those locations cost, I believe, about $1.5 million. That involves right-of-way work, that involves a great amount of utility work, and then purchasing the poles and installing them. I know it seems like a very high number, and it shocks me too, but that is what is costing us.
Goodness gracious. Representative Johnson.
Thank you. It's very expensive to stop and go. And the READY program, you mentioned a 911 call. Have you coordinated with the call centers? Does that rise to the level of a 911 call, or are we going to use a dial a local police number on the READY program? Have you gotten that far down the road? Are we in agreement on that? I mean, it seems to me like that's may or may not flood our 911 first responders with important calls, but seems like it may be a lot.
Through the chair, Ms. Cashin informed me today that we are indeed in those negotiations with those jurisdictions to see about the response and again the impact or potential impact of a large number of calls into that system, because we certainly don't want to overwhelm them. We want to make sure that we're having folks readily identify problem drivers, but we don't want to impact the emergency response for other activities.
Follow-up, Representative Johnson.
Thank you. And just as a suggestion, if you can't do a 911, there's other three-digit numbers that you could use through cell phone providers as a, that would go directly to the local police department as opposed to the 911, and maybe it's a 711 call or something. I can see where you wouldn't want to have separate numbers in every jurisdiction, and I think you're going to run into difficulty with a 911 number. One person's dangerous driver is another person's in a hurry to go fishing. So I could see us getting ourselves in a little bind with the 911s, but there are other avenues, Ms. Cashin, that I know you're aware of. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Okay. Anyone else?
While I have the floor on three-digit numbers, Madam Chairman, I would provide a pitch for the 511, which is the state's highway information number. So if you find yourselves on the road and you want to know about road conditions or construction traffic or activities up ahead, we actually have a 511 system in place. Not for distracted drivers, but for information. Madam Chair, the Sterling Highway, we are seeing the trend line on fatalities, luckily at a fairly level. The traffic volumes are ever increasing, but luckily we are seeing a reduction in the major injury accidents in this area. Mr. Sterling, we are again doing very similar things, rumble strips, center line and shoulder, signing for headlights, ready program, and we're putting in curve delineators and reflectors to help drivers know the curves are ahead. And again, the Bureau of Highway Patrol have established an office in Soldotna to help patrol this area and our ongoing media efforts. Right now, at this time, we do not have a four-lane project identified for this area. We hope that the other softer education and enforcement will be able to meet the needs in the Sterling area.
Frank, I'm noticing that all of these, maybe not all of them, but the majority of them by far, are two-lane highways when we probably have got enough traffic that we should have four-lane.
You're correct, Madam Chairman. When a two-lane highway reaches a traffic volume of approximately 12,000 vehicles a day, it is over capacity. Specifically on the Seward Highway, in the summer months, we see traffic volumes in the 21, 22,000 vehicles a day. And that's where that two-lane road, folks get pent-up anger. They want to get to the fishing spot. They want to get home from the fishing spot or back to and from the Kenai Peninsula. And so tempers get short. People try and take life in their own hands and pass where they shouldn't. And we see those accidents occurring. But you're absolutely correct. It's the two-lane overcapacity roads that we're seeing these major issues, and we're trying to come up with the ways to be able to meet those needs. I've talked to you about what the Alaska State...
Sorry, Representative Johnson has a question.
And I would be negligent, and you and I attended the meeting in Girdwood as well, and there were a number of people that said four-lane road is the answer. Would you mind sharing with the committee the cost?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, the approximate cost of building the four-lane highway on the Seward is approximately $600 million. The highway, as you saw, is bounded on one side by Turnagain Arm, the Alaska Railroad, and on the other side by either Chugach State Park or the National Forest. That, with the designation of Turnagain Arm and Upper Coquimlet as critical habitat for the beluga whale, that would also pose a significant challenge in building out embankment and armoring that embankment in that area. So the cost could conceivably be higher with the cost of mitigation and impact on the wetlands in Turnagain Arm.
So that's thank you, Commissioner.
Okay.
Madam Chairman, in regards to enforcement, I've talked about the creation of the Bureau of Highway Patrol. They're assigning officers to the severe crash areas with times based on data statewide. Getting back to Representative Johnson's question, that communication, looking at the statistics when we know there are going to be higher traffic volumes repeatedly, getting those folks out there. And from my own experience traveling that road this summer and previous summers, the the presence by the Bureau of Highway Patrol, either in their marked vehicles or in their unmarked vehicles, is out there, and you can see them doing their job and making sure the drivers are driving safely. And then the long term, again, the program for the Bureau of Highway Patrol is actually from a grant through the Alaska Highway Safety Office of DOT. That's a four-year grant totaling approximately $4.8 million. So we have another 3 years left in that grant, and we'll hopefully be able to come back to the community and identify the successes that we've seen from that occurring. In regards to education, we have put in place media campaigns, the Click It or Ticket campaigns, the signs, the safety corridor advertisements, the fatigue driving advertisements, encouraging seatbelt use, and then also funding motorcycle safety trainings and briefings, and putting in place safe driver bumper stickers to try and increase awareness of folks when they're on the road and they see a bumper sticker ahead of them to consider driving safely. And most recently, putting in place on our DOT website a Take the Challenge page, which is essentially a refresher for many of us who haven't had to take the driver's education training lately or go for a license exam. It's 15 questions. I would offer you to go to that site and see how many you'll get right. You'll be amazed at how some of our attitudes or recollections may have changed.
Senator Menard.
Through the chair to Mr. Richards, what do you have in the budget to cover the statewide media blitz? How much have you budgeted for?
Through the chair, Senator Menard, it's coming out of the State Highway Safety Office, and I would have to defer to Ms. Cashin to give you that number.
I'd just like to know that.
Through the chair, Senator Menard, roughly $500,000 covers all of our media campaign for all types of driving behavior.
Okay. And that's Marine Highway?
No, I'm sorry. That's just highway safety. Okay. So driver behavior on the roads.
The Click It and Tickets.
Madam Chair.
Representative Johnson.
Is that general fund money, or is there federal match in that, or is it paid for by the feds? Where does that money come from?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, that is all federal funding.
Thank you.
Is that sanctioned money?
Some of it is.
I'm sorry, I missed.
We receive several pots of funding, and some of that is sanctioned funding. A good portion of this of the media is sanctioned funds, which we use for alcohol messages.
Madam Chair, maybe the same question.
Yeah.
What is a sanctioned fund?
Yeah.
sanctioned funds are those funds that go from the federal government to states that do not pass certain laws. And so it's a way for the federal government to send a message to the states that say, we want you to pass these laws and you're not doing it. And so your Highway Safety Office, which is often in a Department of Public Safety, a different department, can choose to keep those funds, those federal transportation funds, which could be used for construction projects. Since the Highway Safety Office for Alaska is located in the Department of Transportation, what we have each year is a meeting, and we sit down and we discuss what type of highway safety engineering projects and highway safety driver behavior projects can share those sanctioned funds. And once we reach an agreement, we send a letter to FHWA, and they divide the funding up appropriately, and it goes through to either the construction side or my side, the driver behavior side.
Representative Peterson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. She just read my mind. I was just coming up with a question there.
I thought I saw your head.
scary. So what you're saying is a sanction fund would be, say, if Alaska didn't have laws that met the federal regulations, say if we put our speed limits at 75 or 80 miles an hour or something like that, then we wouldn't qualify for some of those, or maybe there's a better example.
Through the chair, Representative Peterson. You're correct, except for the example that you give. And what Congress is trying to do with states is send a message for open containers. For example, open container laws in Alaska is just a violation, and they want it at least a misdemeanor. Ignition interlock devices, they want stronger laws. They want our driver license revocation period to last longer and to be non-negotiable with certain types of driver offenses. And these are laws that a lot of states just will not pass. And Alaska is one of them. And so we qualify as a sanctioned state, and that's why the, a good portion of the funding, it goes through my office.
Cindy, would you give us a list of what the federal government wants us to do that we're not doing?
Yes, thank you. I would be happy to.
Doesn't mean we'll do it, but I mean it'll kind of give us an idea.
Certainly.
Okay, Representative Johansson.
I'm just curious, how much money are we talking about?
Through the chair, Representative Johansson, I think roughly $5 million. Yeah, we receive about $10 million in sanctioned funds, and when the dust settles, I believe the construction side, the Highway Safety Improvement Program, receives about $5 million, and my office receives about $5
million. Follow-up?
Are there restrictions on the $5 million construction side, or is it just whatever construction wants to do with it? Or is it linked to highway safety projects, or how does that work?
Through the chair, Representative Johansson, it is for the Highway Safety Improvement Program, which is for a specific highway safety project where we know we've got major accident histories at intersections where we need to put in a street light or a traffic signal or a pedestrian crossing. We can use then those highway safety monies for that safety project.
So some of these projects like rumble strips and stuff, you could use that money on for safety?
Through the chair, Representative Johansson, absolutely.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, and Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. So we get X number of dollars, and X minus Y because we're not living up to a standard that the federal government wants, but we still get X, right? It just has to go to a different place?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, you are correct.
So converse of Representative Wilson's question, what programs can we get rid of that we might be able to use the money for another project that the federal government has forced us to do? So,
do you want to talk?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, again, the funding that comes to us is federal highway dollars funding that was really the specific purposes for highway reconstruction activities. And because of the sanction, the Y amount, as you referred to it, is taken off the top. So it means we can't do pavement for roads in Anchorage or roads in Mat-Su or roads in Wrangell. The government gives us that money for Cindy's efforts in our highway safety improvement projects as somewhat of a carrot to allow us to continue to get some benefit, but maybe not the specific desire for highway pavement.
Follow up.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. And I guess what I'm referencing is that we were misled a little bit by someone, either in the federal government or the state government, when we were doing the seatbelt debate. And the term was, we're going to lose this money. We will not get this money. It's, I think it was $6 million at the time. If we don't pass this law, I think we had a similar thing with a child safety seat last year, that certain heights and stuff if we didn't pass it. And repeatedly, the statement was, we're going to lose this money if we don't pass it. So what I want to make really clear of, and I'm not looking for things we can repeal, but we don't lose the money. We just can't apply it to construction projects. We have to apply it to public safety type projects. Is that an accurate statement?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, I'm not sure that we get a dollar for dollar if we don't enact a particular statute, that if they withhold $10 million, that we actually get $10 million back. Maybe Cindy can answer that.
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, that's a different pot of funds, and those are called incentive funds, and they're one-time funding sources for states that pass certain laws. And if Congress feels strongly enough about a particular type of law, they will offer to the states incentive, one-time incentive funding. So we were able to receive one-time incentive funding for the primary seatbelt bill, and then we were able to receive one-time incentive funding for the child booster seat bill once those bills passed.
Follow-up, Representative Johnson.
If we were to repeal those, would we have to give the money back?
I don't believe so, no, through the chair. No.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Representative Tammy Wilson.
Through the chair, on these sanction funds, are we spending more money on advertising than we would have if we had these laws passed? Is that where some of the monies are going? Is that part of the public safety, is to kind of tell us the rules that we should have because of the benefits they may give us?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, states are required to have a strategic media plan in place that is a companion to the strategic enforcement plan in order to receive almost all of our highway safety types of funding. There's about 8 to 10 different types of highway safety office funding that my office applies for, qualifies for, and receives. And we would lose almost all of that if we didn't have a federally approved media plan in place.
Follow-up, Representative Wilson.
I guess what I'm trying to find out is, you know, how much of that is trying to tell us what we should have versus just safety, like how you to drive on ice, those kinds of things. I mean, are they trying to, are you doing more advertising maybe to get more public input on changing the laws to which the federal government would like us to have?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, I'll try to answer your question. I believe my answer is no. We're not spending funding on trying to find out what the public wants, because through our surveys and studies we are already able to obtain a good idea of what the public wants, and attending the public meetings as well.
Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair.
Representative Johansson.
Representative Johnson started it, so I
thank you. Yeah, I get to blame. Great. Yeah.
If we look at all the programs that caused us to have sanction fund, all the things that we're not doing in the eyes of the federal government, and do all of those things and add them all up, how much money is the state going to, how much money is the federal government going to sign off once they get their way?
Through the chair, Representative Johansson, you're looking at about $5 million a year that is passed through my office, and then either some of it stays in my office or it moves over to the Highway Safety Improvement Program.
Now, what I'm saying, through the chair.
Through the chair.
Chair, is we get this money because we're not passing laws that the federal government wants us. Is that what I understand? That's what I think I understand. Is that incorrect?
Through the chair, Representative Johansson, I apologize. I probably didn't explain it well enough. We're going to receive that funding, but it's the federal government decides that it's going to go to my office, to the Highway Safety Office first. And this happens with all states that are considered sanctioned states. And like I said earlier, some of the states have their Highway Safety Office located in the Department of Public Safety's, or a couple of states have their Highway Safety Office located in the Division of Motor Vehicles or Department of Motor Vehicles. And so when those sanctioned states receive that funding, those offices can choose to hold on to it instead of sharing it with the Highway Safety Improvement Plan. It's my understanding that that doesn't occur, that they come to an agreement with their Highway Safety Improvement Program engineers, just as my office does. It's just a message.
Rep. Johansson.
That's okay. I don't want to waste the committee time anymore, so I'll just stop.
Rep. Wilson.
Through the chair, I'm trying to figure this out myself. So if we didn't pass these other laws, more money would just go to your office than currently does, and you would get to choose how much of that still goes over. Nothing would really change, just which office the money went to first.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, we already are a sanctioned state, so the money, funding already comes to my office. If we pass those laws and we were no longer considered a sanctioned state, that particular pot of funding, $5 million, would go instead to, through FHWA, to the Highway Safety Improvement Program, to DOT in general. My office would not see any of it unless my department set funding aside for my office.
Follow-up, Representative Wilson.
So by passing these laws that they'd like, what we're mostly passing up is possibly these one-time incentives that they'd like to dangle out there.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, no, the one-time incentives are a whole nother story.
Okay.
They're whole, it's the carrot. And the sanction funds are a stick of the federal government. So
is there an incentive for us to pass those rules?
Yes, there is, through the chair.
So Madam Chairman, if I understand the questions coming from Representative Johnson and Johansson and Wilson, T. Wilson, is you'd like to know how much funding the state of Alaska might be receiving if we had the laws in place that the government wants us to, and then since we don't have the funding or those laws in place, how much money then is the state potentially losing or is getting returned to us through the sanctioned funds? We can give you an accounting of that, and we'll present that to the committee.
And if you can kind of maybe make a table and say, okay, under this scenario it's this, under this scenario it's this, and whatever. And there's 10 different funds, and these are the reasons you get them, or something like that.
We will present that to the committee. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you very much.
Thank you,
Sandy. Let's proceed.
Madam Chairman, moving away from the highway safety corridors to sidewalks and pedestrian countdown signals. We've seen that, again, these appurtenances have reduced pedestrian crashes by almost 25%. So we have a program where we're putting them in. We started in Anchorage. We've completed in Fairbanks, where we've installed almost 530 of these heads at about 80 intersections. And we're moving out into the Mat-Su and Kenai.
Now, can you explain to us exactly what you're talking about?
And I apologize, Madam Chairman. The photo on the presentation, if you could see it, on the vertical pole right below the Benson Boulevard street sign is a number, a red hand and a number.
Oh.
You may have seen this now in other locations where you'll be given a countdown. As soon as you are given the white hand to cross the street, the numbers start counting down. Gives you safe passage across that intersection.
That appears in Canada all over the place.
You're correct, and you'll get beeps for those that can't see the numbers, and people will use orange flags, and so a number of various safety features. But we started putting these in, again, using the Highway Safety Improvement Program funds to be able to accomplish this effort for pedestrian safety. Cindy's office has the dubious distinction of unfortunately tracking the fatalities that we have on our highway program statewide. And unfortunately, to date, with the three fatalities we have, they've all involved pedestrians. People not in motor vehicles. They were hit by a motor vehicle, but they weren't in motor vehicles. So we are taking efforts to address pedestrian safety as well.
Okay, Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have noticed where these signals are in place that when you get to about 5, it's an indication for everyone to speed up. Because it's also the lights changing, going the other direction. So they know the old light's coming, so you can see it at a distance. And I've noticed that people speed up when it gets to a certain number. Is there a study or correlation between the auto accidents at the intersections where these exist? Because maybe you can make it at 5, maybe you can't make it at 3. So I count them. I have 8. I know most of them have 8. They don't have numbers. So if I get to 5, that's when I know I have to slow down. So.
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, I'm not aware of a study, but I will certainly ask our traffic safety engineers if they have some.
I would hate to, a fatality in a car and a pedestrian is a terrible accident, but I'd hate to increase the number of accidents by car because we're giving everyone a heads up as to when the lights want to change.
I perfectly understand.
And did you say when you started this slide that we have, yeah, it's decreased by 25% in those areas?
Correct.
That's amazing.
Yes, ma'am.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I know for decades they've have the blinders on the lights so that you can't see if it's about to turn green or, you know, so that you can get out of the intersection quick enough to try to give people a chance to stop so that it reduces accidents. Could they put little blinders on those numbers when they count down so that drivers can't see them, so that they wouldn't speed up to try to make it through on the yellow?
Through the chair, Representative Peterson, I thought that the signal had small blinders on the side, but I'm not sure. But let me check on that and get back to you. We'll be able to give you a typical.
It's kind of hard to tell from the picture.
It
you
is.
Know?
I mean, it certainly doesn't have, as you see on that traffic head above it, what looks like about 6-inch blinders that prevents those intersecting traffic from seeing which light is actually on the signal head. Likely on this, it's there may be only a couple inches, if any.
I see. Thank you.
Representative Johnson?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. This is a little different subject, but there was a story recently about the digital lights not being hot enough to melt the snow. And in some communities, the lights were in blowing snow were being covered up so that you were, in essence, not having a traffic signal. Do we have any of that instances of that in Anchorage or Fairbanks, or has that been a problem in Alaska? I think this is in Minnesota where they had several fatalities. The snow had blown on the lights. It was like this non-function. You couldn't see anything. Have we had anything like that in?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, what you're referring to is the LED light emitting diode lights that we have now installed in most of our traffic signals because it reduces the power consumption by almost 80%.
Wow.
To my knowledge, we have not had any issues with those lights being essentially covered up by blowing snow. I mean, hearing the traffic, the weather conditions right now in southern Minnesota and Iowa, where they're having tremendous snow and winds, I could see that packing up those traffic heads quite readily. Luckily, we don't have that very often.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Johansson?
Is the number countdown standard in your design now? Is that on all of the stoplight? Like if we're so lucky to put the crosswalk in Ketchikan in the capital budget for the third time and not have it detailed this time, would this be part of the standard design for a project like that, the countdown, or is it specific to high safety areas that have been identified?
Through the chair, Representative Johansson, I'm not sure that it's become our design standard, but I can certainly get back to you. And I'll specifically look at the street walk in Ketchikan.
Yes, you will.
Madam Chair, if I may, continuing on, looking at other safety actions that we've undertaken, we are now putting reflectors on our guardrails, where you've got curves and guardrails on both sides. This has proven to be a benefit for folks to know that they are in and curve, especially when you've got blowing snow conditions. And as I talked about previously, the rumble strips. We started this program back in 2000 in our central region and expanded it out to 2002. We had a lot of concerns being raised by citizens about the noise associated with it, but I must tell you, I've also had folks come up to me and tell me how it saved their lives by having those rumble strips as they were falling asleep or reaching for a cell phone or calming a kid, and they hit that rumble strip and they knew that they were about to go off the road and they pulled themselves back on. So we have seen that it's reduced the severe runoff road crashes by almost 22% since installation. And as I said, we are including these now on centerline rumble strips, specifically in the highway safety corridor, because we believe in them as a major safety factor.
Are they relatively inexpensive, or I mean, because you just have to gouge out the
come in with a wheel and it grinds it out.
Yeah.
I believe we are spending for the highway safety corridors approximately $1.5 million for that contractor to do that work.
For
Representative Peterson.
A million and a half a mile, or a million and a half for the...
Through the chair, Representative Peterson, no, that's for the entire length of the highway safety corridors.
Okay.
For the center line.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, 2009 proved to be, to start off with a bang after the legislative session. We had the ice go out on the Yukon River and impact the community of Eagle. We had a rock slide on the road from the Portage Valley into Whittier. And then we also saw the waters of the Matanuska River eating at the Glen Highway. So we responded. DOT had actions both in the community of Eagle, where the road from the old village to the new village was wiped out. DOT, in concert with the Division of Homeland Emergency Management, Homeland Security, went in and brought in a temporary road. Because it went through the muskeg and through the black spruce forest, we actually came in and brought in mats, dura mats, where we laid that down rather than having to come in and place a fill. And it was an emergency road action, and we were able to open up that road to the old village site within days to get folks back to their homes to try and reassemble their lives. If you hadn't seen the pictures before, the ice damage in Eagle was extreme. The ice covered up portions of the village, swept out houses, crumbled vehicles, and literally destroyed people's lives. So we responded, as did others, and the community has been benefited by the work of the state, but also by some volunteer organizations where homes have been rebuilt and folks are able to reestablish their lives in Eagle. On the Copper River Highway out of Cordova, the Copper River Highway has a tendency of wanting to move eastward, and the road has become an impediment to it. And so in the spring events, we're seeing the road get it overtopped. This is approximately mile 38 to 39 on the Copper River Highway, and we have a project out there to place riprap, raise the embankment up so that we will keep the Copper River flowing down its current stream. Up in Nome, again, the spring floods on the Nome-Teller Road. We had severe rot washouts on that road. We went in after the fact, reestablished the roadway so that the road is now back open to the folks wanting to commute between Teller and Nome. And then on the Kuskokwim River down in Tuluksat, high water events impacted the runway. As you may see on the right-hand side of the picture, the portions of the runway were flooded with water, therefore shortening up the runway for emergency access. And so we had to go back in, reestablish the embankment, put down new servicing, and get airplanes flowing. And then in Portage, it was a major rock slide of approximately 400,000 cubic yards of material that came down off the hillside, cutting off the community of Whittier from vehicular traffic. We had huge boulders the size of houses come down, that so conventional equipment needed to be augmented with drilling and shooting of that. And then as we were removing the materials, we found that there were extreme cracks up on the hillside where there was more material that was set to come down. So we had to go up, drill that, and blast that down as a preventative measure. So we have spent there approximately $2.5 million to remove the debris, reestablish the road, and open up the community. And we were successful enough to get that road opened up before the first cruise ship so that the community of Whittier, in their economic well-being from the cruise ship industry, was not as impacted as it could have been. And then again, on the Glen Highway, the Matanuska River, in its march this way to the west, was impacting the Glen Highway. And we were within literally days of losing the road because it had eaten out about 20 feet in literally hours. And so we came in, reestablished, put down some temporary measures to keep the embankment in place, and we'll be going out and reestablishing that with riprap and hardened embankment. Now on to what we have accomplished in our maintenance and operations. We maintain, as a department, approximately 15,000 lane miles, 256 airports. What this represents is approximately half of our general fund operating budget. This is the highways and aviation component within the DOT. Last year, the legislature was very generous and gave us an $11.2 million increment. With that money, we got the clear message that they wanted to see, you all wanted to see, improved services. and asked us what we were going to do. Well, this established and allowed us to continue forward with snow removal on the sidewalks in Anchorage. Before, it was always the city performing that activity as a service to the state, and we are now doing it with state equipment and state personnel to augment the city and their efforts so that the pedestrians are no longer having to walk in the road. We're also increasing our anti-icing efforts at our rural airports so that we'll have better service and more success on arrivals and departures of airplanes into our rural systems, and that will improve the safety for medevac operations. And we're taking care of, again, more safety items that we have on our highway system, from guardrails, signs, lighting, striping, and markings on both the airports and roads. And we'll be reporting back to the Finance Committee on how we have accomplished our efforts with this additional money. As I talked last time, the impact on the new multi-sector permit in Anchorage for the Clean Water Act is going to have a major impact on the amount of sweeping that we're going to do on our roads for picking up of debris and grit. Multiple times a year, it will require us to put on more personnel, more contractors to be able to establish this to meet the EPA's requirement of at least 4 times a year of sweeping by on our highways and arterials. This is going to come at a cost of approximately $2.5 million to the state. And then, Madam Chairman, we have worked cooperatively with the legislature over the interim. We had several meetings with this committee and with the Senate committee. We were able to do our trip along the Dalton Highway. We were able to have the meetings in Mat-Su and in Anchorage to talk about the issues of the department. And I think that was able to then open up more DOT's operations to not only committee members, but also members of the public that attended. We had a great, you all had a great time out in Western Alaska. I unfortunately couldn't make it on that trip, but here you are, Madam Chairman, with Representative Gruenberg, with my good friend Paul Cayuna in Kipnuk, and Paul sends his best to you. And then this is also an indicator of the boardwalks in the community, and then also a picture from our way station out there on the Glen Highway. For those that have not taken the trip on the Dalton Highway, I will extend an invitation. It's an annual trip that we do where we invite legislators to come up. We'll put you in the cab of one of the long-haul trucks, and you'll be able to experience that ride yourself and listen to the tales of the ice road truckers. And we provide you a very good feed at our new maintenance station on Chandelier Shelf, and you get the experience, as many did last year, of an avalanche coming down, which was not planned. It just so happened, and we were able to clean it up in short order. But I hope that's been as educational for you all as it is for us to be able to bring you there and show you the importance of that road and the challenges of that extreme environment.
It actually, I have to put in a plug for it. It was great. And the truck driver was just, he just was more than happy to tell all different kinds of things. And I learned things that I probably never would have learned in a committee. So it was very worthwhile, I thought.
Madam Chairman, I would note that the majority leader and his driver, George has retired from Carlisle, made famous by Ice Road Trucker episode. And I'm not sure that the majority leader was aware of the presence that he was in with the superstar that George has become on the nationwide trucking circuit.
Sure. Representative Johansson.
My driver, Georgie, was particularly fond of the little creatures that run out in front of the trucks and stand up in the middle of the road. Can you identify those animals? What kind of creatures were those?
Pedestrians.
Marmots?
I believe they were marmots. And I'd like I'd like the senator to know that Georgie didn't run over any of the marmots. I know they're near and dear to your heart.
Species.
They are when Georgie's driving.
Thank you.
Madam Chairman, just two more slides. I guess I wanted to, again, end on successes that the department has had, again, recognizing that we've had a significant reduction in the fatalities in the state of Alaska through the efforts of our Highway Safety Office, with our highway safety projects, with our media campaign enforcement. We are leading the nation in the reduction of fatalities on our highways in the U.S., and that we feel very proud of that effort. We have accomplished, as I said last week, our stimulus projects. We've obligated nearly 80% of our funding. We have 1 month to go, and we will obligate 100% of our program, in addition to our regular program. The department staff has put in long hours to accomplish this task, and we're very proud of their efforts. And then we've also, in our promotion of safety within the department, we've seen the injuries within our department from work-related accidents go down considerably. And last but not least, we have effected rescues. And here's an indication of the crew of the Marine Highway vessel Taku receiving the Coast Guard Award for an event that the vessel was able to respond to the 55-foot Alaska Pride that was on fire on Chatham Strait. Captain Moore and his crew were able to respond to the distress call, search for the vessel, and arrive within 30 minutes. Again, it was during a very stormy conditions where you had gale force winds, I believe, and you had a vessel, you had two people overboard in a survival raft, and you had to try and effect that rescue with the rescue boat, but yet in gale force winds. So they had to deploy that rescue boat, and they were able to deploy it, pick up the mariners, and be back on the davit again within 4 minutes' time. And wow, everyone came out safely. So they deserve a round of applause, and they did get it from the Coast Guard. So we are very proud of their actions, and I wanted to bring that to the committee's attention. And with that, Madam Chairman, I'm done with my update at DOT. I have several IOUs for you, and we'll be getting back to you with those.
Okay, thank you. And President Johnson has a question.
I may add to your IOUs. Have we looked into, and maybe you're not the person to ask, the effect of de-icing at Anchorage International Airport on the beluga? Are we going to have to handle that de-icing chemical differently? As opposed, I think right now it just kind of runs off. Are we going to have to do anything on that?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, I'm not aware of the impact of the runoff for the propylene glycol that's used for the anti-icing, de-icing activities at Anchorage International, but we'll get back to you with that.
Yeah, I think that's going to be one of the areas we're going to have some trouble with, if it's being that close to the ocean with the critical habitat for the belugas. I think that may be an issue we're going to have to be dealing with. The second issue, if I might, Madam Chair, is airport marketing in the international system. The free enterprise, I guess is what they're called, airports, Anchorage and Fairbanks. It's still a great concern. I haven't had a satisfactory answer to why we would be in the midst of a very competitive arena and eliminating our marketing department in Anchorage. So those are issues that we will talk with at a later date, but I said add to your IOUs. I know we've had conversations about that, but I will not forget.
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, yes, we do owe you, and we have in preparation a response to your query about the marketing.
Okay.
Representative Munoz.
Thank you. Thank you. In Juneau, recently you changed the de-icing program, street de-icing program, and if you could provide me an update of how that is going. I've gotten input from constituents about that change, and I'd like to know, I'd like to have a status of how that is working. And then also on the sidewalk snow removal issue, if you could provide information on the streets that you maintain in the Juneau area and how often the streets are maintained, I would appreciate it. For sidewalks only. Thank you.
Through the chair, Representative Munoz, be glad to. What you're talking about is our use of sodium chloride instead of magnesium chloride on the anti-icing program, and I'll get you a list of our sidewalk maintenance as well.
I want to say something about the sidewalk because last year where I stay, the sidewalk wasn't, it was like 4 feet high And so I couldn't walk on the sidewalk at all, and so I'd have to walk in the street. And sometimes when it was thawing, it was over my shoes. And so this year, it is so nice because now the sidewalk is plowed, and it's just like heaven compared to what it was last year. So it's I appreciate it, and I'm sure there's lots of other people that do too. Senator Menard.
Thank you, through the chair, to Mr. Richards. If we can roll the discussion back to the airports a little bit, and of course, being...
Just a second. You might want to ask that question, but I just want everyone to know, is it the 4th? I'm trying to remember when we are going to have an airport update. But if you need that right now, that's fine.
If you just put it on your radar, because I'm on the rampage, we do not have a facility where we can fly in, and we're going to be, you know, at 89,000 now, as looking as our population count with the jet, to go where the slope workers can get on a plane and fly up to the North Slope from the Mat-Su, as well to Juneau, as well to Anchorage. And there's a lot of concern right now that why are we at the population we have, and we have airports that could be developed, and they're getting impatient, and I need to pay attention to that as a senator from representing both Palmer and Wasilla. So I know we have 256 airports that we own, and that's, you know, you've got a big job already, but we really have to get serious about having an airport that can accommodate travel like that.
Through the chair, Senator Menard.
Everything goes on the Glen Highway, and it's, you know, not suitable for...
As I understand, your request would be to improve airports for jet...
Yes.
...aircraft. The community of Palmer owns its facility.
Right, the city owns it.
And the city of Wasilla, I believe, owns theirs as well. But I'll be glad to work with those communities, with our aviation staff, to look at what the needs are and what the cost would be to construct those. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, because through the chair to Mr. Richards again, as a follow-up.
Senator Menard.
The Palmer Airport has 6,000 feet paved, 6,009 feet paved, of course, and Wasilla has a ample part. I recognize that the railroad's there, but there's a couple that's very interested in doing something like, you know, Merrill Field, or even it's an issue now that we have to solve because of our population.
Through the chair, Senator Menard, one of the key ingredients is having an air carrier that also wants to fly in there,
mm-hmm.
and then having that as an incentive to be able to for them to use that. That area.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm hearing there are carriers that want to. It's okay. A little political issue.
Okay.
That we all understand.
Representative Gruenberg and then Representative Wilson.
Mr. Richards, I've taken the whole road down in the summertime. Were the trips you talking about in the wintertime?
Through the chair, Representative Gruenberg, are you referring to the Dalton Highway trip?
Yeah.
I was referring to, again, our summer.
Okay. When I went down with a bunch of other people this summer, but I'd like to go up in the winter when they're doing sometimes one or two pusher trucks, too, when you can't see anything. I'd like to go up in the toughest time of the year. I'm serious. I went out this year, was supposed to go out with the Coast Guard in December. And it was so bad they couldn't leave the dock. So, I mean, I got up there at the toughest time of the year out of Kodiak, but they couldn't get out. And I know those trucks will get out. And I still want to get out with the Coast Guard. And really the toughest time. I want to see what those people have to go through. Can you help us?
Through the chair, Representative Gruenberg, what are you doing tomorrow? We could. I'm serious. We will be glad to welcome you to come up there to see our operations. It would take some coordination in terms of your schedule to be able to meet that, and hopefully have it coincide with a major blow, so you would see what the conditions were.
That's good.
And it wins.
Madam Chair, I don't know if anybody else in the legislature is interested in this, but excuse me, I'd like you to follow through and maybe see if other people are interested. Early in the session, we get an excused absence for a day and go up and see what's going on when it's really tough, what these people really have to go through. Not a nice ride in the summer when the little varmints come out, but when it's too tough for them and only truckers and legislators would go.
We'll see what we can do. Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Representative Wilson.
Through the chair, on the READY program, could you just kind of tell me how that would work? Somebody would make a phone call about a dangerous driver. What would happen next? I mean, or how you see it would work?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, I would again request this, that Ms. Cashin come up because she is the driving force behind this.
For the record, my name is Cindy Cash, and I'm the administrator for the Highway Safety Office. Through the chair, Representative Wilson, what the driver would do would dial 911 and get a dispatcher. Where the dispatcher is located depends on what area of the road they're going to be on. But say, you know, they're on the Seward or the Sterling, and that would be the local dispatch, I believe, and the local dispatch would depend on what time of day that the call was made, and that would determine, and where you were located, that would determine if the dispatcher was going to contact local law enforcement or the troopers. And they have an agreement with the dispatch office as to what hours and what areas of the road they're responsible for.
Follow up, Representative Wilson.
Through the chair, would they automatically be stopped because of the phone call, or would the officer have to also see some type of behavior?
Oh, through the chair, Representative Wilson, that's a very good question, and it's one I would need to ask.
And lastly?
Follow up.
Are there any other states that have a program like this that you're developing it through?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, yes. Many states have the program, and in fact, Alaska used to. But it kind of went by the wayside when, due to lack of manpower, you know, it wasn't enforced. And so now that we have the troopers and local law enforcement, more of them out on the road, they have supported that resurrection, as well as changing it from READY, report every drunk driver, to report every dangerous driver, all kinds of dangerous driving behavior.
Thank you.
Representative Gruenberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair, maybe I've missed it somewhere, but what are the department's legislative priorities for this year, and is there anything that still hasn't been put in because we're coming up against deadlines?
Through the chair, Representative Gruenberg, our legislative priorities are going to be the legislation that we have in front of the legislature. We have a couple bills that the governor had sponsored, and then in terms of monitoring the bills and their impact onto the department. And then lastly, it'll be with our budgetary review with the legislature in terms of improving our service and advancing our construction program, whether it be through the Jobs for Main Street bill or through our regular federal and state programs.
Through the chair, nothing that hasn't been introduced yet that you're prepared to talk about or
through the chair, Representative Gruenberg, that's correct.
Okay, that's good. Thanks.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
I want to thank the department for, I know that because of the questions that were asked last week, you added slides to your presentation to try to answer those questions, and we really appreciate it, and thank you for bringing us up to date.
You're welcome, Madam Chair.
And just a note, this probably won't happen again, but this coming Thursday, we will not be having a meeting. So that's... gives everybody a chance to catch up a little bit. Senator Menard.
Madam Chair, when is that meeting again on the airports with the DOT?
It's the 4th or the 6th. I think it's on a Thursday, so it's probably the 6th, but I cannot remember for sure right now.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, no more questions. This meeting will be adjourned at 2:20.